This is a non-biased examination of the ancient texts of the Bible that are accurately predicting the future. This has no affiliation with any religion, group, or other person evaluating this material. All required research was done independently on my own and is protected by copyright unless otherwise noted. In a previous video, we charted Jesus' timeline, which culminates with an asteroid impact and rescue, and Jesus referred us to the book of Daniel, which clarifies that the asteroid will hit at the end of the fourth empire, which Daniel describes as the fourth beast. In this video, we're going to examine Revelation chapter 13, which gives us more clues about the final world empire that will rule at the time of the asteroid impact, specifically the beast with seven heads and ten horns. So in verse 1 of Revelation 13, it says, I stood upon the sand of the sea and saw a beast rise up out of the sea, having seven heads and ten horns, and upon his horns, ten crowns, and upon his heads, the name of blasphemy. Okay, so the first point here is the beast rises up out of the sea. So we'll put that here. The beast with seven heads and ten horns rises out of the sea. And in our examination of Daniel, we found out the fourth beast has ten horns, and it represents the Roman Empire. And we also know the Roman Empire surrounded the Mediterranean Sea at its height. So the beast with seven heads and ten horns that rises out of the sea appears at first glance to refer to the Roman Empire. So we'll add that to our Roman Empire chart, the beast that rises out of the sea. The Roman Empire has seven heads and ten horns. Then verse 2 says, And the beast which I saw was like a leopard, and his feet were as the feet of a bear, and his mouth as the mouth of a lion. And the dragon gave him his power and his seat and great authority. So the first point in this verse is that the beast is like a leopard. So we'll put that here. The beast is like a leopard. And it has the feet of a bear and the mouth of a lion. So we'll add that as a third point. It has the feet of a bear and the mouth of a lion. And the dragon gave him his power, his seat, and great authority. So the beast is like a leopard. His feet were as the feet of a bear, and his mouth is the mouth of a lion. And the dragon gives the beast its power, its seat, and great authority. So it's already clear that this beast with seven heads and ten horns in Revelation 13 is a combination of Daniel's four beasts. It has ten horns, like Daniel's fourth beast. It's like a leopard, which was Daniel's third beast. It has the feet of a bear, which was the second beast, and the mouth of a lion, which was Daniel's first beast. And we know the lion represents the Babylonian Empire, the bear represents the first Persian Empire, the leopard represents the Greek Empire and the Hellenistic period, and the ten horns of this beast in Revelation 13 appear to refer to the ten horns of the Roman Empire. And we also know the Roman Empire was historically made up of three sections, the Western Roman Empire, the Eastern Roman Empire, and the Holy Roman Empire. So originally it seemed the three sections of the Roman Empire may be part of the ten horns, but now we know that can't be because Daniel tells us that ten horns are the ten toes of the feet, which occur at the end of the Roman Empire, the fourth beast. So the three sections that start at the beginning of the Roman Empire during the legs phase cannot be part of the horns, but they may be the three of the heads. So Revelation 13 says the beast has seven heads, and the beast is like the leopard, which had four heads. And the beast has ten horns, which are part of the fourth empire, which was historically segregated into three sections. So the four heads of the leopard and the three sections of the Roman Empire may represent the seven heads of the beast. The beast is like the leopard, has the feet of the bear and the mouth of the lion. So that seems to say it wasn't fully formed until the leopard. It had the mouth at the lion of Babylon, the feet at the bear of Persia, and it was like the leopard, and the leopard had four heads. So the beast has the four heads of the leopard, the Greek Empire, and the beast also has the three additional heads of the Roman Empire. So those seem to be the seven heads of the beast, the four heads of the leopard plus the three sections of the Roman Empire. And the ten horns occur at the very end of the fourth empire. So the beast with seven heads and ten horns started at Babylon and continues into our modern era. So these appear to be the seven heads of the beast. And now verse 3 says, "And I saw one of his heads, as it were, wounded to death, and his deadly wound was healed, and all the world wondered after the beast." So we'll add that here, the fifth point. One of the seven heads is wounded, and then afterward healed. And we'll add that to this chart as well. One of the seven heads is wounded, and then afterward healed. Then verse 3 continues into 4. "All the world wondered after the beast, and they worshiped the dragon, which gave power to the beast. And they worshiped the beast, saying, 'Who is like the beast? Who is able to make war with him?'" So we'll add that here as a sixth point. All the world worships both the dragon and the beast, and they ask, "Who is able to make war with the beast?" So that question implies that no one is able to make war with the dragon or the beast. And we already know the reason they can't make war with the beast is because the beast rules in the name of peace. We already know from our examination of Daniel that the kingdom of fierce countenance that destroys by peace rises here. It was the League of Nations, which became the United Nations. So we're just receiving confirmation in Revelation 13 that this is what Daniel was describing. So we're going to add this to the Roman Empire chart. Heads 5, 6, and 7 appear to refer to the Western, Eastern, and Holy Roman Empires, and the wound may refer to the abolition of the Holy Roman Empire in 1806 after Napoleon's defeat and the Treaty of Pressburg, and that was during the French Revolutionary Wars. So that was a wound by the sword, or a wound by war, to the seventh head of the beast. Okay, then verse 5 says, "And there was given to him a mouth, speaking great things and blasphemies, and power was given to him to continue 42 months. And 42 months equals roughly 3.5 years. So we'll put that here. The beast is given power to continue 42 months or 3.5 years. And we'll add that to the chart here. The beast will continue 42 months or 3.5 years. And notice that matches the time period we were given in Daniel, the time times in half a time. So if a time is 1 year, times is 2 years, and half a time is half a year, that equals 3.5 years. And that's common knowledge. 42 months is 3.5 years, which matches the time times in half a time. And in a previous video, it became clear that Daniel 12, Revelation 12, and Matthew 24 all say the rescue will occur at the start of that time period. When the asteroid hits, all the people in the book, the elect, will escape for a time times in half a time or 3.5 years. And that's when the dragon goes after the remnant. So we have that on this chart as well. The beast will be given power to continue 42 months. And that word continue seems to make sense now, because from our examination of Revelation 12, it appears the dragon will continue after the asteroid impact and go after the remnant. And the dragon gives power to the beast. So that may be why Revelation 13 uses the word continue. The asteroid hits and the beast continues after that for 42 months or 3.5 years. And that's when Revelation 12 told us the dragon will go after the remnant. And remember, Daniel said after that burning flame stone, some of the beast's lives will be prolonged for a season in time right here. the fourth beast. I beheld till the thrones were cast down. I beheld till the beast was slain and given to the burning flame. And as concerning the rest of the beasts, they had their dominion taken away, yet their lives were prolonged for a season and a time. So this burning flame is described as a stone in Daniel 2. So we're told the burning stone destroys the beast, but the beast has the power to continue for 42 months or 3.5 years afterward, and the other beasts will survive a season and a time. So the beast continues 42 months, and then verse 6 says, and he opened his mouth in blasphemy against God to blaspheme his name and his tabernacle and them that dwell in heaven. So we'll put that here. During that 42 months or 3.5 year period, the beast blasphemes the name of God, the tabernacle, and those in heaven. And we'll add that to this chart as well. The name of God, the tabernacle, and the people in heaven are blasphemed at that point. And then verse 7 says, it was given to him to make war with the saints and to overcome them, and power was given to him over all kindreds and tongues and nations. So we'll add that here. The beast made war with the saints and overcame them. And then verse 8 says, and all that dwell upon the earth will worship him whose names are not written in the book of life. So those who are not in the book of life will worship the beast. We'll put that here. The beast is worshipped by those who are not written in the book of life. And that matches what we looked at in a previous video. Daniel 12, Revelation 12, and Matthew 24 concur that all those in the book, the elect, will be rescued at the asteroid impact, which starts that final 3.5 year period. So Daniel 12 told us all those in the book will be rescued. And now Revelation 13 confirms that the ones not written in the book are the ones who worship the beast. So all those in the book who do not worship the beast escape to the wilderness at the start of that 3.5 years. And during that time, the beast blasphemes the people in heaven. So we're told the people in the book will fly to the wilderness. But where is that wilderness exactly? Revelation 12 told us the woman in verse 14 who represents those in the book will be given two wings of a great eagle that they might fly into the wilderness into their place. And verse 6 tells us their place is the place prepared by God. And that's the Father's house. Jesus said in John 14, verse 2, in my Father's house are many mansions. I go to prepare a place for you. And if I go to prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you unto myself, that where I am, there you will be also. So the people in the book are going to the place prepared by God, which is the Father's house where Jesus is. And Jesus told us where that place is in Luke 17. But first, notice Jesus confirmed himself, starting in verse 29, that it will rain fire and brimstone from heaven in the day when the Son of Man is revealed. That's right here, immediately after the tribulation of the days. The stars fall from heaven, then shall appear the sign of the Son of Man in heaven. That's after the tribulation of the days, right here, after 1260 days, which the texts tell us represent years. The stars fall and the sign of the Son of Man appears in heaven. So Jesus outright confirms this timeline in Luke 17, starting in verse 29. He said, it will rain fire and brimstone from heaven in the day when the Son of Man is revealed. He said, in that day, when it rains fire and brimstone from heaven, in that day or night, depending on where you are on the planet, one shall be taken and the other left. And when he was asked where they will be taken to, he answered with another riddle. He said, wheresoever the body is, there the eagles will be gathered together. And if we look at the Greek word translated as body in this verse, number 4983, it means bodies of planets and stars, heavenly bodies. So Luke 17, 36 and 37 literally say, one shall be taken and the other left. And they asked, where, Lord? And he answered, wheresoever the bodies of planets and stars are, there the eagles will be gathered together. So the woman fled into the wilderness where she had a place prepared by God that they should feed her there. The woman was given two wings of a great eagle that she might fly into the wilderness, into her place. Jesus said, I go to prepare a place for you that where I am, you will be also. One shall be taken and the other left. Where the heavenly stars are, there the eagles will be gathered together. So they will be taken, they will be flown by the eagles to the place prepared by God, the Father's house, where Jesus is. That's where the eagles will gather, and they will stay there for a time, times and half a time. In other words, 42 months or 3.5 years. And that refers to the elect, the ones written in the book. Jesus said the angels will gather the elect from the four winds. But Jesus said in Luke 17, some will be taken and others left. And Revelation 12 tells us some of the ones that are left are the remnant, the remaining, the ones the dragon will go after during that 3.5 years. And Revelation 13 is telling us during that time, the beast will blaspheme God's name, the tabernacle, and those who are in heaven. So those in heaven refer to the elect, those in the book that will be flown to the Father's house where Jesus is. The eagles will carry them and gather in heaven. So it says the beast will blaspheme the tabernacle, that's the Father's house, and the people in heaven. So that would be the elect or those in the book. So this tells us the beast is going to lie about those in the book after they're rescued and taken to the heavenly tabernacle where Jesus is. The beast is going to lie about the name of God, God's tabernacle, and the elect who are taken to heaven for that 3.5 years. But then remember Revelation 12 said after the woman flies to the wilderness, the dragon is angry and goes to make war with the remnant. And the remnant are those who keep the commandments of God and have the testimony of Jesus Christ. So that's not everyone who's left behind. That's the ones that the dragon goes after. So some of the people who keep the commandments and have the testimony of Jesus Christ, the remnant, will not go to the Father's house at the rescue when the asteroid hits. And that may tie into the next level of this, because verse 8 tells us those on the earth will worship the beast, and they are those who are not in the book. They're on the earth because they didn't go to the Father's house. We're told the ones in the book will be rescued, and the ones worshiping the beast are the ones not in the book. They're the ones left behind, the remnant. And Revelation 12 tells us some of them keep the commandments and have the testimony of Jesus Christ. So right here, this might help right here. The woman flies into the wilderness. This is what we're told. We have the scriptures here. The woman flies to the wilderness by the wings of the eagle. The woman flies to the place that is prepared by God. The dragon goes after the remnant after the woman leaves. The remnant keep the commandments and have the testimony of Jesus. The place Jesus prepares is the Father's house. One will be taken and the other left. They will be taken to heaven where the eagles will gather. The elect will be gathered by the angels. All those in the book will be delivered at that time. those who worship the beast are left on earth for 3.5 years after that asteroid. The ones who worship the beast are not in the book. So the texts are clear that some of those who worship the beast are those who have the testimony of Jesus Christ and keep the commandments. And the texts tell us why that is. In verse 2 of Revelation 13, we're told the beast is like a leopard, has the feet of a bear and the mouth of a lion. So the beast is part leopard, bear, and lion in Revelation 13. And then if we look at Hosea 13, starting in verse 4 through 8, it says, I am the Lord thy God from the land of Egypt. They have forgotten me, therefore I will be unto them as a lion, as a leopard by the way I observe them. I will meet them as a bear that is bereaved of her whelps, and I will rend the call of their heart, and there I will devour them like a lion. The wild beast shall tear them. So it tells us here that the Lord from the land of Egypt will be unto them as a lion, a leopard, and a bear. The Lord will devour them. The beast shall tear them. So there's no doubt that the beast in Revelation 13, which is like a leopard, bear, and lion, refers to the four beasts of Daniel, the lion, the bear, and the leopard. But there's also no doubt that it's referring to Hosea 13. I am the Lord, I will be unto them as a lion, a leopard, and a bear. I will devour them, the wild beast shall tear them. And the beast was like a leopard, a bear, and a lion. So the Lord from the land of Egypt is the beast. That's very clear. Okay, so remember, Jesus referred us to the book of Daniel in order to understand his timeline. But just a few verses later, he also referred us to the parable of the fig tree. He said, learn the parable of the fig tree, specifically the one about the fig tree when its branch is tender and it first puts forth leaves. And this riddle about the first ripening the fig tree is in the book of Hosea, in Hosea chapter 9. It's talking about how Israel has corrupted themselves. In fact, the whole book of Hosea is talking about Israel and how it strayed from God. And in verse 10, it says, Israel were like grapes in the wilderness, and their fathers were as the first ripe in the fig tree, but they separated themselves. So it seems Jesus was referring us to the book of Hosea when he said, learn the parable of the fig tree when its branch is tender. And that's important because Jesus knew just a few chapters after the fig tree riddle in chapter 9, Hosea identifies in chapter 13 exactly who the beast with 7 heads and 10 horns is. Jesus himself pointed us to this. It was important enough that he specifically said, read Daniel, then read the parable of the first ripe in the fig tree. And Hosea is right after Daniel in the Bible. So he was specifically pointing us to Hosea. So Jesus referred us to Daniel first, which tells us who the lion, the bear, and the leopard are. And then next, Jesus referred us to Hosea, which tells us the Lord of Egypt is the one acting as the lion, the bear, and the leopard. Okay, so let's look at this word in Hosea 13, verse 4, that was translated as Lord. It's translated as Yahweh here, and the number is 3068, which is also translated as Yahovah or Jehovah. But notice the original Hebrew word here is YHWH. So YHWH is the original Hebrew for this word, number 3068. Which is usually translated as Lord in all caps in the King James Bible. It's sometimes pronounced as Yahweh, but the original Hebrew word was written without the vowels as YHWH. So according to Wiki, two theories have been proposed to explain the origin of the word Yahweh. The first is that the name was at first a title for El, and the alternative theory is that El and Yahweh were originally separate gods. El's home was in the north, and Yahweh's is always described as being in the south. A widely accepted hypothesis is that traders brought Yahweh to Israel along the caravan routes between Egypt and Palestine. The chief of the gods was El, described as the kind, the compassionate. And it says here, El, not Yahweh, was the original God of Israel. And that seems to be confirmed in Exodus 6, verses 2 and 3. It says, I am the Lord, and I appeared to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob by the name of God Almighty, but by the name Jehovah I was not known to them. And the phrase God Almighty is number 410, which is simply El, and Shaddai. So El Shaddai. It's saying, I was known to, it says, I am the Lord. I appeared to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob by the name El Shaddai, but by the name Jehovah I was not known to them. So by this name, Lord, or Yahweh, number 3068, which is right here, it says, I was not known to them by that name. So that seems to confirm what Wiki says here, that El, not Yahweh, was the original God of Israel. It says, the names of the oldest characters in the Torah show reverence toward El rather than Yahweh. By the 9th century BC, Yahweh was Israel's national God, but Deuteronomy 32, 8, and 9 indicate El is the Most High who gave the nations their inheritance, and Yahweh's portion was appointed by El. So anyway, also the word Jehovah, it says, is a Latinization of the word that most scholars believe to be a late hybrid around 1100 CE, but there's some evidence that it may have been in use by the 5th century AD. But the earliest archaeological record of the word Yahweh, or YHWH, was found on the Mesha stele, dated at 840 BC. But this name, YHWH, which is number 3068 in the concordance, it does not appear in the first chapter of Genesis. So in Genesis 1, the name for God is Elohim, which is plural and means divine ones. It's number 430. And you can see that's the word all throughout Genesis chapter 1. So you can see the word is translated as God in the King James, but it's all number 430, which is the word Elohim, and it's plural. So all throughout the whole chapter of Genesis 1. So Genesis 1 tells us the Elohim created new conditions in the earth and its atmosphere, making earth a paradise, and it was good. Then in Genesis 2, it says the Elohim finished their work, and in verse 4 of Genesis 2, the word Lord shows up, which is word number 3068, and that's the word YHWH, Yahweh. And it indicates that Yahweh was one of the Elohim because the words appear together in Genesis 2. So Yahweh was one of the Elohim, it seems like, a specific member of that. And remember, Deuteronomy confirmed that when it said El appointed Yahweh's portion. So verse 8 here says, Yahweh planted a garden in Eden. So in the King James, Yahweh is usually translated as Lord in all capital letters. So it says, Yahweh planted a garden in Eden, and a river went out of Eden and became into four heads, and the fourth river is the Euphrates. So the Euphrates River is the main river in modern-day Iraq. So scholars have been searching for the remains of the Garden of Eden in that area for hundreds of years, maybe even thousands of years. This map shows a few of the locations thought to be where Eden was. But the important point here is Genesis 1 tells us the Elohim made the whole earth a paradise. And Genesis 2 tells us Yehovah, or Yahweh, created a garden here in modern-day Iraq, or near there. And that was also the region known as Mesopotamia to historians and anthropologists. So Mesopotamia is the area where modern civilization originated, according to mainstream Western scientific theories. And Genesis 2 tells us it was Yahweh who created Eden in that same general region of the world. And now Hosea tells us Yahweh will be as a lion, leopard, and bear, which Revelation 13 tells us is the beast with seven heads and ten horns. So the beast with seven heads and ten horns was like a leopard, the third beast of Daniel. It had the mouth of a lion, which was the first beast in Daniel, and the feet of a bear, which was the second beast. And we know the lion, the bear, and the leopard in Daniel represent the Babylonian Empire, the first Persian Empire, and the Greek Empire. So Revelation 13 says, the beast with seven heads and ten horns is like a leopard, bear, and lion. And Hosea 13 says, Yahweh is like a leopard, bear, and lion, and devours them like a beast. And now Genesis 2 tells us Yahweh created a garden in Eden where the Euphrates comes out. And that was Mesopotamia, the cradle of civilization. And out of Mesopotamia, Babylon rose up. So Hosea 13 tells us Yahweh will be unto them as a lion, which was Babylon. And Revelation 13 tells us the beast will have the mouth of the lion, Babylon. And this is the location where modern anthropologists believe writing first developed in the Western world. And the texts say the beast had the mouth of the lion, Babylon. So that may indicate the beast begins to speak here in Babylon. And that's interesting because Genesis 11 talks about the language of Babylon. It says, the whole earth spoke the same language, and the humans said, let us build a tower up to heaven and let us make a name. And the Lord came down, and the Lord said, let us go down and there confound their language, that they may not understand each other's speech. So the Lord scattered them abroad. Therefore, the name of it is called Babel. So that tells us right there that the Lord, which is the word for Yahweh in this verse, Genesis 11, 6. Verses 6 and 7 tell us the Lord Yahweh is not one person, but a group. The Lord said, let us go down to confound their language. So this is really important. We need to take note of this. The beast is Yahweh or Yehovah, and they are a group who go down to earth to confuse the language. And Jesus is the one who referred us to this. He wanted us to know who the deceiver is. By the way, Jesus saved them from Yahweh. You can see Matthew 1:21 says, she shall bring forth a son and call his name Jesus, for he shall save his people from their sins. And it tells us who Jesus' people were in verse 1. He descended from Abraham. So Jesus is saving his people, the descendants of Abraham, from their sins. And what were their sins? Hosea told us they were no longer following God. And remember, Jesus referred us to Hosea, the parable of the fig tree. So Hosea says, and we're just going to skim through here real fast, and please pause if you want to read this, but Hosea, the book of Hosea, this is what it's saying. Hear the word of the Lord, you children of Israel, for the Lord has a controversy with the inhabitants of the land, because there's no truth, nor mercy, nor knowledge of God in the land. I will punish them for their ways. They have begotten strange children. I will pour out my wrath on them. I will be to them as a lion. I desired mercy and not sacrifice, and the knowledge of God more than burnt offerings. I have seen a horrible thing in the house of Israel. They commit falsehood, and the thief comes in. There is none among them that calls to me. Strangers have devoured his strength, and he knoweth it not. Woe unto them, for they have fled from me. Destruction to them. They have spoken lies against me. They have not cried to me with their heart. He shall come as an eagle against the house of the Lord, because they have transgressed. Israel has cast off the thing that is good. They have set up kings, but not by me. The workmen made it. It is not God. Israel is swallowed up. They sacrifice flesh for the sacrifices and eat it, but the Lord does not accept them. I will send a fire upon his cities. Rejoice not, Israel, for you have gone a-whoring from your God. What will you do in the solemn day, in the day of the feast? The days of visitation are come, and Israel shall know it, for the multitude of their iniquity and the great hatred. They have deeply corrupted themselves. He will remember their iniquity. I found Israel like grapes in the wilderness. I saw your fathers as the first ripe in the fig tree, but they separated themselves, and their abominations were according as they loved. So this right here is what Jesus told us to learn. Israel is an empty vine. He brings forth fruit to himself. Israel shall be ashamed of his own counsel. Israel has sinned. You have eaten the fruit of lies. In a morning shall the king of Israel be cut off. When Israel was a child, I loved him, but they went and sacrificed to Balaam. The sword shall abide on his cities. But Judah yet ruleth with God and is faithful with the saints. But the Lord also has a controversy with Judah and will punish Jacob according to his ways, according to his doings. He will recompense him. The Lord God of hosts is his memorial. Turn to your God, wait on your God continually. He is a merchant. The balances of deceit are in his hand. He loves to oppress. So this clearly tells us again in Hosea 12 that the Lord God of hosts is a deceiver and oppressor. So this is Hosea 12:5. It says, Yahweh, the God of war. Yahweh is a memorial. So Yahweh is the God of war, it says. Okay, so verse 5, Yahweh, the God of war, Yahweh is his memorial. And then verse 7, he is a merchant. The balances of deceit are in his hand. He loves to oppress. Ephraim exalted himself in Israel. Therefore shall they be as the chaff. I am the Lord thy God from the land of Egypt. They have forgotten me. Therefore will I be unto them as a lion, a leopard, and a bear. I will devour them. The wild beast shall tear them. O Israel, you have destroyed yourself. And then it goes on to say, the sorrows of a travailing woman shall come upon him. So that's the reference to the birth again. So Jesus, a descendant of Jacob, of Israel, it says here, will save his people from their sins. And he referred us to Hosea for a reason. So it says their God is a God of war who loves to oppress. They forgot the true God. So if we look at the word Jesus, number 2424, it's the Greek word Iesu, and its Hebrew origin is 03091. Which is Yehoshua, which is a combination of two words, number 3068, which is Yahweh or Yehovah, and also the other word is number 3467, which means to save. So the word Yehoshua is a combination of two words, Yahweh save or save Yahweh. But does it mean Jehovah is salvation as it says here, or does it mean save from Jehovah or save from Yahweh? Well, Jesus told us himself, he said, you will know the false prophets by their fruits. Beware of false prophets which come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ravening wolves. You will know them by their fruits. He didn't say you will know them by their God or by their name. He said you will know them by their fruits. Every good tree brings forth good fruit, but a corrupt tree brings forth evil fruit. Okay, so let's just look at a few of the fruits of Yahweh. He told Abraham to leave his father's house and go to Canaan, but Canaan was cursed by Noah, who was a just man who walked with Elohim. Yahweh promised to make Abraham a great nation if he left his father. Moses was with Yahweh for 40 days and nights, and when Jesus was in the wilderness for 40 days and nights, he was approached by Satan, who proposed the same basic offer Yahweh gave to Abraham. Yahweh also demanded money in exchange for atonement. He commanded the Israelites to kill their brothers, companions, and neighbors, commanded them to kill little boys and their mothers, ordered a man to kill his innocent daughter, and so on. This probably isn't even 10% of the evil that Yahweh supposedly did, according to the Bible. So Jesus said, you will know the false prophets by their fruits. If they're evil, their fruits will be evil. So of course, if their God is telling them to do evil things, then their God is evil. It's the same principle. So Jesus, who came to save them from their sins, which Hosea told us included following a false god, then this does not mean Yahweh saves, but it means saves from Yahweh. So back to Genesis 11, verse 6 and 7, the Lord Yahweh said, let us go down and confuse their language and scatter them. And this place is called Babel in verse 9. So this story is known as the Tower of Babel. This is a wiki article on it right here. And it says that the ziggurat of Babylon is believed to be the Tower of Babel. It says Nebuchadnezzar II rebuilt it, but it was destroyed by Alexander the Great. So we know from Daniel that the lion was the Neo-Babylonian Empire under Nebuchadnezzar II, and Alexander was the leopard. So the Tower of Babel, it says, was rebuilt here during the lion, the Neo-Babylonian Empire, and destroyed during Alexander's empire, the leopard. So the texts are very clear that Yahweh is a group who went down to earth to confound the language when they were building the Tower of Babel. So that tells us Yahweh came down during the Babylonian Empire. And that makes sense because the texts tell us Yahweh is the beast who had the mouth of a lion. Their mouth is during the Babylonian Empire. So it may be that they confounded the language of humans in order to amplify the sound of their own voice. Or, you know, drown out the other teachings in order to amplify their own. I don't know, but it says in verse 4, it says they created a name at this point as well. And the first archaeological evidence of the word Yahweh occurred on the Mesha stele, which is dated at 840 BC, and that was during the Babylonian period, that same time period when it says they developed the name in Genesis 11. So Babylon was first built around 2300 BC. It became a dynasty in 1894 BC. And it lasted until it was abandoned around 141 BC. And the first archaeological record of the name Yahweh appeared in 840 BC, while Babylon was under the Assyrian Empire just a few hundred years before Nebuchadnezzar's Neo-Babylonian Empire in that region. And the Tower of Babel was rebuilt at that point when the texts tell us Yahweh became the beast and the mouth of the lion. So Genesis, Hosea, and Revelation tell us Yahweh created Eden near Mesopotamia, where writing first developed in the Western world. And that became the Babylonian Empire, the lion, which is the mouth of the beast. And the language of humans was confounded at that point, and the name was created. Then that Babylonian Empire grew into the first Persian Empire, which you can see moved way out from the region. And this Persian Empire is the bear, and the texts tell us the beast, Yahweh, has the feet of the bear, which may represent the movement. The beast starts walking at that point. It moves out from where it originally started in Iraq. And this bear, the first Persian Empire, then became the leopard, the Greek Empire, roughly in this area. And that Greek Empire then became the Roman Empire, which surrounded the whole Mediterranean Sea at its height. So the first beast of Daniel was the Babylonian Empire, when Yahweh began to speak, when the human language was confounded and the name was created. Next, Yahweh began to walk the feet of the bear that was moving out of the first Persian Empire, the expanding outward. Then the leopard, the Greek Empire, the beast will be like a leopard, have the feet of a bear and the mouth of a lion. Yahweh is the beast who created the Garden of Eden, which became the Babylonian Empire, then the Persian Empire, then the Greek Empire, and then the Roman Empire. And now we're told the beast has seven heads and 10 horns. The 10 horns we know are at the end of the Roman Empire, the 10 toes of the feet, the very end when the asteroid hits. The seven heads may be the four heads of the leopard and the three first sections of the Roman Empire. Revelation 13 tells us one of its heads is wounded but then healed, and all the world worshiped the beast, saying, "Who is able to make war with the beast? Because the beast comes in the name of peace." The beast is pretending to be God. And that may be one reason it says in verse 6, the beast opened his mouth in blasphemy against God to blaspheme the name. And that also explains why in verse 8, when it says all those on the earth will worship the beast whose names are not written in the book, it explains why that corresponds to the remnant in Revelation 12 who are left behind after those in the book leave. The woman in Revelation 12 flies to the wilderness, and she represents all those in the book in Daniel 12. So the remnant who are left behind are not in the book. So the woman is all those in the book. And in verse 17 of Revelation 12, it says the dragon was wroth with the woman. In other words, the dragon was wroth with all those in the book who escaped. And then the dragon went to make war with the remnant. And it clearly says here that the remnant are those left behind after those in the book escape. But the remnant includes some of those who keep the commandments and have the testimony of Jesus Christ. So the dragon goes after the remnant after the woman leaves. The woman represents all those in the book who are delivered at the start of the 3.5 years. Those who worship the beast are not in the book. They're left behind. That's why it says those who worship the beast are on the earth. They're left behind after those in the book escape. Woe to the inhabitants of the earth, those who worship the beast, who are not in the book, who are left behind, are those who are the remnant. Revelation's clear on that. The remnant are left behind after those in the book escape. The dragon makes war with the remnant. But Revelation 12 is also clear, the remnant keep the commandments of God and have the testimony of Jesus. So how can those who keep the commandments and have the testimony of Jesus be the same people who worship the beast? It's because the beast is Yahweh. And Hosea 13 clarifies that, but it continues in Hosea 14. It says in verse 9, "Who is wise that will understand these things? For the ways of the Lord are right, and the just shall walk in them, but the transgressors shall fall therein." So one way that can make sense is the just will walk in the right ways of the Lord, and the transgressors will fall in the false ways of the Lord. Maybe that's what it means. That makes sense. And this seems to be explained in Revelation 22. It says, "He that is unjust, let him be unjust still. He that is filthy, let him be filthy still. He that is righteous, let him be righteous still. And he that is holy, let him be holy still. My reward is with me to give every man according to his works." So between Hosea 14 and Revelation 22, it seems to be saying the deception of the beast pretending to be God is separating the just from the unjust. And then it says here in verse 14, "Blessed are they who do his commandments, that they may have the right to the tree of life." So this tells us that some who keep the commandments are the blessed. So we'll add that here. Blessed are those who keep the commandments. And Revelation 19 verse 9 tells us, "Blessed are they which are called to the marriage supper of the Lamb." The marriage supper is come, and his wife made herself ready. So the blessed are the wife of the Lamb. We know the wife returns at the end. So they are up there for 3.5 years. Then they come back again. That's Revelation 21. But the main point here is that the blessed are those who are called to the marriage. And this marriage is described in Matthew 22. It says the kingdom of heaven is like a marriage, and those that were bidden or invited would not come. They made light of it and went their ways. So notice it says right here, Jesus is talking about the remnant in verse 6. The remnant are the ones making light of it. And they took the servants and treated them spitefully and killed them, those murderers. The wedding is ready, but those who were bidden are not worthy. Go therefore and find as many as you can and invite them to the marriage, both good and bad. So it says invite both good and bad people. And then verse 14, many are called but few are chosen. So Jesus confirmed himself that not all the people claiming the testimony of Jesus Christ will go to the wedding. He himself said it's the remnant who will not go. He actually said they're not worthy in verse 8. So the blessed are those called to the marriage. The kingdom of heaven is the marriage, and the remnant are not worthy to go there. But he said they were invited. They were bidden to the wedding. They just didn't want to go. They made light of it and went their ways. And Revelation 12 says the remnant keep the commandments and have the testimony of Jesus, but they are left behind. So why? The question is why? And this is in the parable of the 10 virgins. The kingdom of heaven will be like 10 virgins which went forth to meet the bridegroom. 5 were wise and 5 were foolish. While the bridegroom tarried or delayed, they all slumbered and slept. And at midnight the bridegroom came, and they all arose. And the foolish said to the wise, "Give us your oil, our lamps have gone out." And afterward they said, "Lord, Lord," and the bridegroom said, "I don't know you." So he's saying here that half of the people who go forth to meet the bridegroom will be left behind. And those are the remnant. And this is what it says at the end of Jesus' timeline in Matthew 24, after he says, learn the parable of the fig tree, and as the days of Noah were, so also the coming of the Son of Man will be. And then he says, in verse 40, the one shall be taken and the other left. In such an hour as you think not, the Son of Man will come. Sorry, my computer is acting weird. In such an hour as you think not, the Son of Man will come. The faithful and wise servant will give them meat in due season. Blessed is that servant. But if the evil servant says in his heart, my Lord delays his coming, and shall begin to smite his fellow servants and to eat and drink with the drunken, the Lord of that servant shall come in a day when he does not look for him and appoint him his portion with the hypocrites. So notice it says, the Lord of that servant, which indicates those who are spending their time attacking others worship a different Lord. They don't worship maybe the God of war. They don't worship the Lord of love. It says their Lord will come in a day they don't expect, and they will get the portion of the hypocrites. And then here's another riddle Jesus told about this in Matthew 21. There was a certain householder which planted a vineyard and let it out to husbandmen and went into a far country. And when the time of the fruit drew near, he sent his servants to receive the fruit, and the husbandmen took his servants and beat, stoned, and killed them. And when the Lord of the vineyard therefore comes, he will miserably destroy those wicked men and lay out his vineyard to other husbandmen, which shall render him the fruits in their seasons. The stone which the builders rejected, the same is become the head of the corner. Therefore I say to you, the kingdom of God shall be taken from you and given to a nation bringing forth the fruits thereof. So that indicates the kingdom of God. There are people that already think that it's theirs. But he's saying here, there's going to be people who think that they're part of that, and it's going to be taken from them because they're actually hurting people. So, and they think that's okay because they're worshiping this God of war. So the kingdom of God will be taken from some and given to those bringing forth the fruits of heaven. So that means the kingdom of God, obviously, some people think that they have it because they're worshiping the God of war. This makes it clear, though, that religion has nothing to do with who will be taken or who will be left behind, because it says some Christians will be taken, some will be left behind. Some of them that are left behind have the testimony of Jesus Christ, and some of them who are taken have the testimony. Some of them who are those that keep the commandments are blessed. It even says in other parts of the text that there are people keeping the commandments that don't even know they're keeping the commandments. So blessed are those who keep the commandments, but there are people who keep the commandments who are going to be left behind. It clearly says that. So it has nothing to do with religion. It has to do with their fruits. That's what Jesus said. And another word Jesus uses to identify those who will be taken and those who will be left behind are the words blessed and woe. So notice number 10 through 12 here. Those who worship the beast are on the earth after the escape. Woe unto those on the earth. This is the verse right here in Revelation 12. It says, rejoice, you heavens, and you that dwell in them, but woe to the inhabitants of the earth. So that indicates those that go to the heavenly place, they are rejoicing, but woe unto those that stay on the earth. So number 14, the blessed are those called to the marriage, and the kingdom of heaven is the marriage. But number 12, woe to the inhabitants of the earth, and those are those who worship the beast who are not in the book. So there are two groups, the blessed and the woed, and Jesus tells us who they are. The blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. The blessed are they that mourn. The blessed are the meek. The blessed are they that hunger and thirst after righteousness. The blessed are the merciful. The blessed are the pure in heart. The blessed are the peacemakers. The blessed are they that are persecuted for righteousness' sake. Blessed are you when men shall revile you and persecute you and say all manner of evil against you falsely. Be glad about that, because great is your reward in heaven. And then the attributes of the blessed are also listed in Luke 6. Blessed are the poor, blessed are you that hunger, blessed are you that weep, blessed are you when men shall hate you and separate you from their company. But then it tells us who the woed are. It says, woe unto you that are rich, woe unto you that are full, woe unto you that laugh now, woe unto you when all men shall speak well of you. And then Luke 11 continues. It says, the Pharisees make clean the outside of the cup and the platter, but your inward part is full of ravening and wickedness, you fools. So these are the foolish versions he's talking to. Woe unto you, Pharisees, for you love the uppermost seats in the synagogues. Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, you hypocrites, you are as graves. Woe unto you, lawyers, for you laid men with burdens grievous to be borne, and you yourselves touch not the burdens with one of your fingers. Woe unto you, for you build the sepulchres of the prophets, and your fathers killed them. And that actually leads into the next section of Revelation 13, which we're not going to talk about in this video. But those are just a few points about the blessed and the woed. But this also ties into the riddle of the wheat and the tares right here in Matthew 13. It says, the kingdom of heaven is like a man which sowed good seed in his field, but while the man slept, his enemy came and sowed tares among the wheat. Then the servants said to him, do you want us to go and gather up the tares? But he said, no, let both grow together until the harvest. And in the time of the harvest, gather together first the tares and bind them in bundles in order to burn them, but gather the wheat into my barn. So the first thing is the binding of the tares. He says that's the first thing that happens at the time of the harvest. And then after that, well, we know what the burning is. That's the asteroid impact. And maybe nukes, sounds like nukes as well. It's war, basically, because we know the war starts right after the asteroid. So that's what the burning represents here. So we know that happens from our examination of the text. We know that that happens simultaneously. The wheat or those in the book are taken to what he says here, figuratively, the barn. They're taken to that safe place, the Father's house, at the same time the asteroid impacts. That's what the texts say happens. But the binding occurs before that. So Hosea 14 indicates the transgressors will fall in the ways of the Lord while at the same time the just are walking in them. So at least part of the binding seems to be the ways of the false God. So Yahweh is the beast to those who follow the false God. That's what Hosea tells us. So the beast with seven heads and ten horns represents a false god, and the dragon gives power to this false god right here. That's one level of what these texts are saying, but there's another level to all of this, because we're told the oppressors, number 12, the army of the stars, the Lord of the army, are real. It says they're mingling with the seed of humans. We're told they mate with humans when humans begin to multiply on the earth. So that's the first level of the beast with seven heads and ten horns. It started during the Babylonian Empire and has continued to this day. And the Bible tells us it is YHWH, Yahweh, or Yehovah. And that's crucial, I think, to understand if we want to know the true timeline of events. Jesus said the event will occur when those who worship the beast do not expect it to occur. So they are not going to know when this is going to occur. They're going to think that it's a long way off, or that it's, sure, it's going to happen soon, but not right now. You know, they don't know. It's going to happen. Jesus said the portion that goes to the hypocrites, it will happen when they don't think it's going to happen. In other words, the standard religious timelines are probably wrong. So it's important that we understand what Jesus was really talking about if we want to know when it's going to happen. That's really crucial. So that's it for this week. If you want more information, the whole series playlist is linked here, and there are several other videos linked in the description below. Just click on Show More to open up more links on this subject. And if you like this video, please consider providing support. These presentations are funded by viewers like you. So I just want to say thank you to everyone who's making this research possible. I hope you're doing well, and I'll talk to you next week.